trickling streams find their way to the rivers, and they are rivers. Rivers run to the ocean, and they are ocean. Blessings fall upon you like soft rain from the lofty clouds, filling the holy grail of our hearts. As sunlight fills space. These moments together are timelessness. They are resonance, here and now. They are discovery of who you are, not who you become, but who you've always been. Welcome to Star Media Transmission, dedicated to the great mystery.
Because at the time I was working as special advisor to the Minister for the Northwest, and so I was in and around the Pilbara and Kimberley, but particularly the Pilbara, sort of establishing women's action groups in these very, very masculine, but I think not masculine, testosterone-driven industry, where to respect a woman was considered a poofter thing to do. So,
were you working with Aboriginal women, or
no? In fact, I'd had specific instructions
not to work with
Aboriginal. Okay. So I was in and around the mining towns, Parabadoo and Tom Price and Newman and Panawanika, Port Hedland, setting up women's actions groups at Goldsworthy and Shagap, all through the Pilbara. And at the same time, trying to open up the industry. Well, I was trying to do three things. One was open up the industry to women, because they were only ever clerical, stockings, high heels, air conditioning, makeup, and that's it.
Right.
And so that meant dealing with the unions. And to deal with the unions meant getting down there and dirty with them in the wet canteen.
Mm-hmm.
You can imagine what a wet canteen is. It's a swill house.
Mm-hmm.
Because not far from the wet canteen were the single men's quarters. And the single men's quarters were just gross.
I can imagine.
Just gross.
Mm, I can imagine.
And in a safe distance was the town where married people lived. But they're all young. No one under 40,
mm-hmm.
because the workforce is young.
Mm-hmm.
Consequently,
no one over 40, you mean?
Hardly a soul over 40.
Mm-hmm.
So all of the single men, they just basically drank and worked. They were the union blokes.
Right.
So I had to negotiate with them, to open the workforce up to women, and that was pretty interesting.
And what was the industry, actually?
Iron ore mining.
What kind of mining?
Eh?
What kind of mining?
Iron ore.
Iron ore mining.
Iron
uh-huh.
ore.
Iron ore.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Iron ore. Mm-hmm.
Iron ore.
Yeah.
Ore.
Just keeping it straight for these guys. Iron ore. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so... so... women in town were miserable. There was a very high incidence of miscarriage and termination.
Mm.
They were miserable. Why I'm telling you this is because this was the blueprint that was going to be put into the Kimberley, into Muldjali's country.
Wow.
All right? This collective misery and... history repeats itself. This was in the 70s, and here we are in the 2014s.
Right.
And we're going through it all over again.
Jeez.
All over again, where fly-in, fly-out people are... their relationships are dying, they're becoming abusive, they're drinking and drugging, and they are simply cogs in a mining industry, mostly
mm-hmm.
gas. Anyway, so I introduced home ownership, I introduced women in the workforce, And the third thing was creativity and to provide an artist in residence. And so Mount Newman, BHP, were the ones who set that off. So that was all fine. I then got headhunted in Canada by the Saskatchewan government to look at Indian and Métis settlements there with the view to...
Okay, I'm in Canada now.
Yeah, with the view to finding some kind of home ownership.
Right.
You know, working out some kind of home ownership. But while I was there... Oh, in the meantime, I'd gone to the United Nations Habitat Conference in Vancouver in 76, where I represented the Australian government in remote, on some film that they'd made on remote community. But I actually wasn't very popular with the government, not that that bothered me that much. But that, at Habitat, I got the opportunity to go up to the Northwest Territories, to Yellowknife, where I met Chief Dene Cho of the Dene Nation. And so I skipped off the United Nations tour and I went on a private tour with Chief Dene Cho and the Dene people.
Right, which are the Navajo, but they call themselves the Dene. They are rightly called the Dene.
The Dene Nation.
Right, that's right.
Yeah. And so, you know, when I went back to Saskatchewan, you know, I had that experience and interest, plus all of the Australian experience. And a very strange thing happened while I was there. I started getting letters from Australia, but they weren't actually letters. They were newspaper articles about Argyle Diamonds, who were... trying to set up in the Kimberley.
Right, right.
And these newspaper cuttings kept arriving, and I've never to this day found out where they came from.
Oh, that's interesting.
But one of them just said, you've got to come back.
Okay.
So in 1979, I came back to Australia. And I went to, and then went up to Darwin and worked with the Northern Land Council working in Arnhem Land. And again, I started getting this stuff from the Kimberley. So finally, I went back to the Kimberley and Muljali met him in Broome at a meeting. And he just looked up and he said, you took a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, what? What? He said, I've been calling you.
Mm-hmm. Maybe he's the one who sent those. Maybe he had them sent.
No idea.
Yeah, no idea. That's
no
better.
No idea.
That's all the better.
However, you know, I ended up getting back there. So I started working then... as a consultant to the West Australian Minister for Industrial Relations, who later became the Premier. And I specifically asked to work in the Kimberley. So that's where Muljali and I, from, you know, sort of 1983, really got down to sort of working together And he started, when he came to Perth to sacred sites meetings or whatever, he'd stay with me instead of in a hotel.
Right.
It always amazed me, Shanti Maya, that they would send a message to him, be in Perth at this time, your ticket will be available for you.
Right.
In those days, you used to be able to get a plane from Broome to from Derby to Broome, and then another plane, Broome to Perth. Muljali would get out his battered old op shop suitcase and his quite musty smelling
kangaroo
South clothes.
Yeah, kangaroo oil.
You know, but they just had been stuffed away in, you know, because he didn't wear them up there. He only wore them in the cold country. And so he'd fly down. They always put him on a night flight because they're cheaper. And then he'd get a taxi and they'd just tell him which hotel he was in. So he'd book into the hotel and then he'd ring me up.
Mm-hmm.
And by now it's midnight or so.
Right, right.
Yeah? And he'd say, "What are you doing?" "Well, I'm sleeping, my old darling." "Sleeping? You know what time it is?"
Right.
"Ah." I said, "Where are you?" "I'm here at this hotel." "Oh, that's nice. What are you doing there?" He said, "I'm come to your place." I said, you got a really flat room there. He says, you come and get me." "Oh, Muljali, it's 1 o'clock in the morning." "You right? You got petrol?" "I got petrol." So I'd go in and go up the lift and the door is open and he's sitting on the edge of his bed, fully dressed as he got off the plane, hasn't undone a single thing. And he's just waiting. He says, "Oh, good, you're here now." So we'd come home and sit down on the floor and straight away he'd say, you know, "You got knowledge?" Which is cup of tea. "Oh, yes, I got knowledge, my old darling, but, you know, now 2 o'clock.
Yeah, yeah.
This happened over and over and over again. And I'm amazed that a government and their advisors can be so insensitive to the values and customs and experience of a tribal lawman in expecting him to negotiate this entire experience of hotels and checking in and making your own cups of tea and replacing, I mean, you know, the whole thing.
Yeah.
The whole thing.
Out of their world.
Not
completely.
Only, but staying in a air-conditioned room where no windows open.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would be rough for me, let alone them. Mm-hmm.
Well, they don't do it with bushies anymore. They find something that's a little bit more sensitive and appropriate.
Right, good for them.
Yeah. So that's when he used to stay, we would just start talking all through the 80s, you know, we were just talking. When he went off and started doing Yoro Yoro, his
wonderful
book with
book.
Jutta Malnick,
absolutely, yeah.
You know, all the time he would stay, and I can't remember where I was working, probably still up there. Anyway, I went up there, it was in about 1989, and there'd been several land inquiries and things weren't going well for the Ngarrindjeri, and anyway, I don't remember why I went there, but Muljali and I went for a picnic down on the May River, and we took a picnic and we were just eating apples, and when I'd finished my apple I tossed the apple core into the river, and he ate his apple and he tossed his apple core into the river, and both the apple cores came around into this little eddy, this little beach we're at, and were circling. I said, "Oh, I don't like that much. I want my apple core out there, sailing away down to the sea."
Mm-hmm.
"Me too." And so it went it went round again, and after about the third circuit, mine jumped over the little eddy and off it went. And Muljali's looking, "Hey boy, what happening? Mine coming back again." And it went around again, and Muljali, by now what was happening was really interesting, because it was as though the whole atmosphere went sepia.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it kind of, it started at the peripheries of my memory, it just went blurred away, you know, and came sepiaed in what we were doing, because Moljani's energy was crazy. You know, he's saying, "You got to help, you got to help." So we're chucking bundis, stones, you know, at his apple core. And he's saying, "You don't want to go. He's stuck here, this like us. We're stuck." I said, "Well, we've got to get that apple core into the stream again, into the energy flow." So we're working and working and working. And creeping up behind us was a storm cell. Lightning Brothers, creeping up behind it, behind us. We heard it before we saw it. We heard this rolling thunder. Maybe that's why it was sepia, you know. So bundis flying and splashing the water. And finally, his apple core went over, and the relief on his face was immense. At that moment, a hawk swooped down over the river, barely skimming over our heads, and flew off, and the thunderstorm turned right and went off somewhere else. So we sat there, exhausted in the shade, and Moljali said, "You've got to help us write our story, proper meaning way." And that's
beautiful.
Men's business, women's business.
Right, right.
So we just had a look at what the, you know, what the dynamics were. You know, there was a whole political action happening in Australia in the early 90s. There was land claims and law. There was discrimination, there was anti-discrimination legislation. I mean, you know, there was a lot of legal stuff happening. But we sat down, I sat down with Moljali and Niora, Gawanali, Nalgut, Jodhpur, big mob of law people, and we said, "What are we going to really do?" And that's when Moljali, that's when I heard, and when in sort of 1989, that's when I heard him say for the first time, "We only got a little bit of time left. We got this gift we've been trying to give you, but you always block."
Mm-hmm. Were they talking about you or the white people?
Got you, white fellas.
Okay.
And that's the first time I'd heard that. And then I heard him say it for the next, all through the 90s, I heard him saying that. And then I heard, you know, a lot of the other law people saying, "Got you, say they want to know, but they don't really want to know."
Yeah, I actually find that myself still, in some ways, a lot.
Well, the reality is, Shanti Mai, the reality is that mainstream Australia has maintained its ignorance assertively.
Yeah, assertively. That's a good way to put it. Yeah. And maybe inadvertently, but definitely assertedly.
Including our current Prime Minister, who thinks taking a few of his political colleagues into tented accommodation in northeast Arnhem Land, and that's the only place he goes. He's the Minister for Indigenous Affairs.
Do you think that they know anything about these people? I don't either. I think that they live in a different world.
Well, this is what I mean. There's this, the maintenance of ignorance that's been asserted and continues to be asserted. And so back then, what we said, well, what we got to do, this is the old people, they're saying, what we got to do is teach him up, got here. We've got to teach him up. Mm-hmm. And we got to teach up our young ones.
Mm-hmm.
So that's when the 90s was an absolutely incredible time where Muljali and I were soulmates. We were one.
Mm-hmm.
We were just one.
Mm-hmm.
Ngarinyan, Gadia, man, woman, we right. were just one. And like you, and I noted you said this when you were talking about Maharishi.
Uh-huh.
Is it, what is it?
Maharaji.
Maharaji.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Where you said, not once.
Yeah.
Was there any inappropriate attention?
Yeah, 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 absolutely.
Right? And, you know, people don't want to believe it.
Yeah, but whether they believe it or not doesn't change the fact, does it?
It doesn't.
No.
No. You know, so we said, okay, we need to educate the young two ways, two cultures, two laws, side by side. Muljali always said, side by side, not one on top the other.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. We have very good, absolutely important.
How simple and realistic is that?
Mm-hmm.
Because for mainstream Australia, patriarchy is one on top of the
right,
other.
Right, right.
Law is one on top of the other. At the head of every institution
of
is a boy. And I deliberately say boy.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
At
immature
through
yeah.
throughout
yeah.
you know throughout yeah. society
misunderstanding
so side by side you know is that took me into men's business and women's business, and I lived women's business in Ngarinyan, and I lived woman
mm-hmm.
in Ngarinyan culture, and in my culture I lived activist, feminist,
mm-hmm.
freedom fighter,
mm-hmm.
struggler. Mm-hmm. I was at the front of the parade.
Masculine business.
It was boy business.
Yeah, yeah. yeah. I would even say masculine business, because it was a point of maturity that you were bringing to the community, and men, when masculine and true, they do the outer work, isn't it? Yeah. When not masculine and true, they do a kind of
yeah.
messy thing. I think all people do, actually. I think women have their place in this, too, in some ways.
Well, we, of course.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So when Muljali used to come down, I gradually learned about being a self-respecting woman.
Mm.
And when I had friends around, especially my feminist friends, or even some of my feminist male friends, and Muljali would be there and he'd hold his cup up and say, Nalaja! Or he'd say, you got Nala? Meat.
Mm-hmm.
I'd say, well, yeah, I've got Nala. Good.
uh-huh.
And I'd get up,
mm-hmm.
you know.
And serve him. Mm-hmm.
And serve him.
Yeah, that's beautiful.
And my friends, you know, their eyes are hanging down. you know, they're saying,
what are you doing?
Have you completely yes, sold up your principles? And I'd say, and you know, a cheeky bloke might say, hey, Hannah, cup of tea. And I'd just give him the finger and tell him to get it himself.
yeah, say, that's it.
You're not black.
mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
Because for them it was like a competition and a victory.
Right.
It wasn't out of respect. It
right.
was out of oppression.
Right.
That they say, right, this woman has been taught her proper place by this black man, and we'll reap the benefit of that.
Right. Right.
So we'll just tell her, okay,
you do.
You know, now you know what the how the patriarchy works properly, and so get me a cup of tea too. Not.
yeah, yeah. The whole difference is the atmosphere and the intention, isn't it?
Oh, I absolutely... Look, I'm sure you did as well. I absolutely loved being a woman in Muljali's masculinity, because his manhood was so balanced.
It's a complementary point?
Well, you know, when I asked him about it, he said, you know, and it was about when he learned women's business, and he said he learned women's business when he was a little boy.
Mm-hmm.
And he looked at me, you know, sort of like this, as if to say, don't you know that?
Mm-hmm.
And so he said, look, you look here. That little boy, he come from that woman, he come from that man, right? Right. Well, that's it. What's it? Well, he got her, he got him.
Yeah. That's right.
That's it. So what he got to do is listen to that woman,
mm-hmm.
so that part of him can grow.
Yeah, of course.
And he got to respect that woman so he can respect himself. Duh.
Yeah, hello. That's beautiful. That's a very, very beautiful way to put it. Mm-hmm.
It makes me feel very dumb. When I just, my head becomes crowded with political debate and social argument and anthropology and all the ologies under the sun, where there's this perspective and there's that perspective and nature versus nurture and this versus that, and this is where Muljali and I felt so comfortable when we birthed Two-Way.
Mm-hmm.
And we both birthed Two-Way.
Mm-hmm.
And Two-Way is Two-Way. It's cultural, Ngarinyan, Gadigal. It's gender, it's man, woman. It's relationship in all its forms. All relationship.
Yes.
All relationship.
Yes.
Two-Way. And the way we looked at Two-Way is always with two hands. And so I've got my hands up now because, you know, there's this hand and there's this hand, but that's not the end of the story because I can do this with my hands.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah? I can do this.
Mm-hmm.
Yes? I can listen and draw at the same time because of two hands.
Right.
Okay, so this is where we see them not as mirrors of each other, but as having the most incredibly rich potential, these two hands, that allow me to create something in the space, this third space. And right. This is what we call the literal. And this is the third space of the Wanjina.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
The literal. The literal being...
Thank you.
Where land and sea meet, or land and water meet, and interlap with each other.
Mm-hmm. This is beautiful.
It's not overlap. They interlap mm-hmm. with each other.
Coalesce, isn't it?
Where me, the woman, the water,
mm-hmm.
and he, the man, the structures, the systems, the land. Now it's land, now it's sea. But when you go down there, even to the edge of the dam, and you look at the ground, and it looks like land, and if you stamp on it, it bounces as if it's solid. But if you stand and just wriggle...
Right, you'll sink in.
All the water comes up.
Mm-hmm.
And you're in ankle-deep water in seconds.
Right.
That experience is a philosophy.
Right. It's a teaching. It's a way... It's teaching you something about a way of life. Hmm?
Ask people to think about it.
Mm-hmm.
Just do it.
Mm-hmm.
And then let the experience
mm-hmm.
feed up through you.
Right, right.
Because that's, once you experience that literal and you bring that through your consciousness, then you really understand your own feminine and masculine.
Mm-hmm. And the complements
within.
Because
when you need the masculine, you can stamp.
Right.
And when you need the feminine, you can jiggle in the water.
Right.
This is the amniotic nature, the fluidity of our reality.
Right. Right.
We're both.
Absolutely. Absolutely, 100%. This is also bringing in the beauty and the elaboration that you gave to us about the weaving. This is a very similar analogy. Uh-huh. Yeah, and it seems to me like wherever you look around yourself, if you have this kind of awareness that you just spoke about, you'll find it everywhere. Mm-hmm. If you look closer to what you said.
Hmm? Yeah. We were, and in all of this, I mean, Muljali and Paddy Nyara really taught me about water by just saying things that I already knew, like, we're nearly all water.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But what I learned was to appreciate the wateriness of me and awareness, and my awareness. Water and story are eternal cycles. For me, and sitting around the campfire in June in the Gardner Plateau, where the nighttime temperature is dropping down to perhaps 2 degrees, we're by the Wungud waterhole. And we have a blazing fire. And Nyara says, we're nearly all water. He said, only that fire keeping water away. But you look here. That water, he creeping down your back. Because that water from above coming down to sit on the waterhole. Another literal.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's no membrane.
Right. Right.
There's no membrane.
This is something I might ask you later.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Sitting there. And then he says, morning time, daughter sun come up, picking any daylight. You watch. You go back up there.
The water.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You go back up there.
Mm-hmm.
And again, that's... the simplicity is to start to actually experience and recognize the tidal and cyclic nature of the 90% of us that's water.
Right.
The fluidity, you know, the awareness, and it's out of this fluidity, out of the sea, out of this fluidity, that story comes. And from story is, story animates principles.
Absolutely. And while you're speaking, I'm seeing the water, even in a very still and reflective place, gently moving along. And if it doesn't move along, it becomes stagnant. And in stagnant water is spoiled water and stinking water and becomes poison.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah, so...
And that's as true of the puddle as it is of my puddle.
Right, right. That's what I'm yes. envisioning the consciousness processing itself through our lives. If it's not moving, if there isn't some kind of moving along, even in very deep and reflective waters, then it becomes... stagnant. It can even evaporate into hardness, huh? Depending on the depth of it. Mm-hmm. I want to ask you, what do you see as a singularity? What is a singularity to you? Because I'm pretty sure we're speaking the same language, but I have a feeling that there's some difference in definition somewhere along the line. What do you see as singularity? Because I'd like to have our language.
I I don't. Nothing can be reduced to one.
I agree.
Because one,
right,
needs a context.
Yes.
To exist.
Yes. Yes. And it goes very deep, that point that you're making. Very, very deep indeed. So,
and that's the relationship.
Of course.
So there's always two.
Right. Right. You know? Or more. Two is fundamental. Yeah, but the multiplicity begins with relationship.
That's right. Absolutely. With relationship. And that's where this, what we've just been talking about, this literal, you know, where the alchemy happens,
mm-hmm,
in the space between thoughts, in the land between trees,
right, in the,
you know, in the space between power poles,
right, the combination of elements like water and land.
Mm. Mm.
So I agree with that. This oneness idea, for me, is a bit frustrating because people tend to have this idea that they need to crush everything into one. So I really appreciate this, what you just say about singularity. And in my experience, everything is seamlessly and total. And I think we've spoken about this before.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, and that's where I think we were talking the other day. What is the singularity, and how does it relate? Interestingly enough, to totality.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, this is this is really Western. This whole shape of this discussion is Western.
Yeah,
because
that's true.
It. You know, what underlies it all is the sense of I, and I the individual, and I the ego.
Right.
If you're in a Narayan mindset, then all of that doesn't exist.
See, I want everybody to hear that if you're in a tribal or a fundamental awareness with yourself, that I and ego does not exist. So if there's no root to it, then why do we give it attention?
Yeah,
thank you.
So blackfellas will rarely say I.
Okay.
They'll say we.
Yeah.
Because their consciousness is an entire mob. You know, an entire mob, but not only an entire mob, a map.
A total functioning.
A map of country. So when they say we, they're talking about the Wungud, the Wurnan relationship system, the family, everything. That's we've been there,
mm-hmm.
And so then when to say we've been there is not I have travelled there.
Right.
It's we've been there, and our spirit is there.
Right.
You know, and this is evident, one of the nicest stories, I might have already told it on another tape, was, you know, when there's a group of white fellas up in country and sitting around, and, you know, these are all I mob. And Maljali said, not we. We don't have that I mob business. You know why? Because you look here. You look here. You do that, your skin fall off. Your hair fall off. You hot, sweating, your sweat fall off.
Mm-hmm.
All the time, you dropping and leaking bits of yourself. Mm-hmm. Where that going? You're going in that land there.
It's so beautiful.
That's you. Every little bit of you is all of you.
Yeah.
So what happened then? You have a look, he says. You have a look. Look at him. Ants come along. And then take him over there into that tree. And then him climb up the tree. You're in the tree.
Yeah.
You go into the water. Water's in the spinifex. Yeah? You're in the spinifex. So what happened then, he said, next time you come back here, land recognise you.
Right.
He welcome you.
Right.
Because there's all of you. That's why that tree, he my countryman, because I am him, in yeah. him, and he is in me.
Yeah.
So it's not, you know, a new agey kind of nostalgic belief.
No, it's a way of life.
It's biological.
Yeah, exactly.
It's biological.
Mm-hmm.
While they can get a skin cell in Japan and clone something off it,
right?
That, honestly, that should slap us awake and say, everywhere we go, we leave parts of ourselves and become a part of a totality.
Yeah, absolutely.
Bits of me enters the food chain, nourishes the ground, enters into the water, elemental, evaporates into the sky, comes down in rain. I'm everywhere.
Of course.
Right. Right. And we absorb everywhere we go into us. So everything is within us and we are within everything.
Seamlessly right. total and complementarily functioning. It's beautiful.
So it doesn't even have to, you know, you see, Moljali and the Mangaranyan countrymen, they're not what you'd call mystical. Not in the, you know, the tradition of Indian mystics and Gnostics and all of that mob. They're absolutely down to earth.
But they... They would be considered mystics in the sense of... from a Western point of view, living really a, like you say, right down to earth, right in the middle of the shamanic field. I mean, the shaman means, the word shaman means, in one essence, it means seeing through the darkness.
Mm.
And we call it the mystery, we call it mysticism because we've come to live in little containers.
Well, I think we call it mysticism because of the doctrine of I.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
As soon as you've
There's
got
the
doctrine of I, mm-hmm. then everything else is outside of you.
That's right.
And therefore everything else is subject. And our language, which had all the tenses, is how we communicate.
Mm.
And therefore everything is subject or object.
Right, absolutely.
Do you follow?
Oh, of course, of
but
course.
But when you...
Absolutely.
When you don't have any of those particles and participles in your language, but you say, we've been come to that. All right? We've been come to that.
Mm-hmm. We've been come to that.
We've been come to that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Through the Ngarinan lens, when you're in the Ngarinan mind, you are aware constantly of the bugs on the table,
mm-hmm.
and the insects outside, mm-hmm. and the clouds and the flies. I mean, you're just aware of everything all around you, because we share this space.
Yeah, you are the details in a way, isn't it? And the details are yourself.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And this table, he's supporting me, this one.
Yeah.
Thank you, table.
Yeah, that's right.
Did David or any of the elders share a story about the source of language, its origin, how it was offered to the human?
Only that it comes in story. And it comes in story, and there's a connection with water. But it comes in story. And story, for them, spoken language is on the same level as painting up, as what do you call it, body gesture. And when I'm talking about and with Ngarrinyan, you know, you'll see my face change, you know, over that way. You know, a white fella will say, over that way, and point a finger. Ngarrinyan, just say, this way. You know, and it's, they're pointing with this, or their body will tell you a lot of the communication is body language and reading their bodies and their gesture language, you know, so their language is a lot of gesture as well. And then that is reinforced with painting and body painting. The paint, all of the ochres that are used in paint come from countrymen. For example, white ochre for Ngarrinyan is possum piss. Come from that possum piss site. Right? So when you're painting up, you're aware that you've got chosen animal. There's other, when they're doing the red, you know, the red ochre, that's another source. That's a blood source from Wadoi. And then there's the lines, and I think the lines are among the most incredible, because if you have a look at photos of Ngarrinyan being painted up, you'll see that the line comes up the leg and then up to here, and then there's a gap around the waist, and then the lines continue up over the shoulders. Yeah. Then up over the face. Then they're holding something across here with cord that goes up like that, or like that, and then another one on top. And it's like an antenna.
That's what I thought always. It's an antenna.
It's an antenna which connects
these lines.
The lines.
Ah.
Right through.
Mm-hmm.
Right through.
Mm-hmm.
So painting isn't random.
No.
And this, the song comes in, and the song is shared by the dancers and the sticks. Didgeridoo is more an entertainment instrument. The sticks, the clap sticks, are the rhythm and the voice. But Ngarrinyan songs are really just mantras. You know, they might only have two or three lines.
Right.
You know, they might only have six words.
Right. But there's...
Yeah, and the story is, you know, well, they're singing and tapping it, but somebody is dancing it, and somebody is painted up with it, and
right.
somebody is, you know, so there's... Everybody is involved, so it's one big thing.
Right.
You know, which acknowledges everybody and the fire. And the bushes, you know. So there's this constant kind of... So to answer your question, spoken language is minimal. Dance, song, paint, gesture, story. They're Ngarrinyan language. And a language like English, you know, just doesn't exist. Except in the context of all the rest. Where does it come from? Well, from the Guiyongguiyong, probably. Guiyongguiyong. Because Guiyongguiyong brought stone tool technology and the Wunan.
And Guiyongguiyong is?
Those kind of wafty shapes.
Mm-hmm.
That float up rocks.
Okay. And Is that planetary or is that extraterrestrial?
Planetary.
Mm-hmm. And did they...
Oh, now, wait a minute. Well, you see, you know, again, they don't make any...
Any distinction.
They don't
that
make any
so
distinction.
That is so beautiful. Mm, yeah. It's all an environment.
It's only us that say...
Yeah, that's right. That there's
heavens,
extra.
Earth, and, you know... only us separate everything to understand
right.
it.
Right.
And they don't get that.
Yeah, I can understand why
How
they don't
How can
get
you
that.
Do that?
Yeah.
They just don't get that.
Mm-hmm.
So Milky Way, you know, is in the waterhole.
Right, it's home. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Hannah. I want to continue.
You're welcome.
Ever and ever and ever. Thank you.
As one single drop of rain blesses the ocean, you too are a blessing in the ocean of boundless experience. Until we meet again, I am, as you are, here and now, the great Mystery.